Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.5 The Game on this first place Thursday morning. The Atlanta Braves at first, they play at noon today, trying to sweep the Pittsburgh Pirates, sending Julio Teheran to the mound against the guy that hit Josh Donaldson and got Josh Donaldson suspended, Joe Musgrove. That'll be a few boos or two for Joe Musgrove today. Braves won six in a row, and we'll certainly be talking about them coming up throughout the program because they are the lead story today. But there's some other news that we want to make sure that we get to today, including this will be the final day of the three-day mandatory minicamp for the Atlanta Falcons in Flowery Branch. How much you can glean on a minicamp, I'm not really sure, Hugh, but, you know, you try and get – it just seems to me, and I'm actually kind of weirdly thankful that the Falcons have a fifth preseason game this year.
Yeah, to just get a little bit more acclimated to what they're trying to accomplish. I mean, it when you look at it like that, John, but it really – that the fifth game really helps – the younger guys more so than the older guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the older guys are going to be getting most of the reps and practicing everything, and the young guys are going to, you know, get in where they fit in. But when you look at that first preseason game, it's just going to be a glorified college football game.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of Kurt Benkert.
Yeah.
You know, right. So, you know, and by the way, Dan Quinn has said nice things that Kurt Benkert, the Falcons, it's a little, maybe a little bit unusual, but of the 90 players that they have, at the mandatory minicamp, only three are quarterbacks. Just three. Usually,
I mean, they don't care a whole lot of quarterbacks, and they also do a great job. They only carry two on the roster. Since I've been here, I only remember two quarterbacks being on the roster at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So they use that other spot for something else. Some teams carry three quarterbacks. And some teams might even carry four. But the Falcons have always carried two because I think that's because Matt Ryan's been so durable.
Mm-hmm.
Over the past few years.
And they like what they see out of Benkert.
Yeah.
I mean, they do.
They do. So it's going to be interesting to see if they change that philosophy. And not only that, John, if they do decide to do that, where do they pull, if they pull, from another roster spot, or does he get – is he on the I forgot what it's called, the practice squad. Yeah.
Oh, Benkert's going to be in the practice squad. You may see them pick up another quarterback when we get to camp, just to have another arm for all these preseason games, because you don't want to, you know, what's Matt Ryan going to play against Denver? He'll play three plays. Against Miami, he may not play at all. Against the Jets, he may play three plays. Against Washington, he may play a half, and against Jacksonville, he may not play at all. I mean, it's going to be, you know, one or two series. And then a half. I mean, and the rest of the time is going to be Matt Schaub and Kurt Benkert. And if you, because of five games, you may need another quarterback to take some of the reps.
And then, you know, in training camp, throwing a whole lot and stuff like that. So you had to take a little bit of pressure off it.
So Dan Quinn, the defensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons, also happens to be, I don't know, the head coach of the team, is kind of running camp here with all these new additions, all these new guys. And he wants to make sure everybody's focused. So he's got this T-shirt on. And the T-shirt says "Locked," LOCKED, locked. That's all it says, right? Locked. And so the media, work us through this T-shirt that says "Locked."
The you know what we had this for was locked. It was about staying that way the whole time, meeting wise, walk through, practice, and every time we go, we just try to use the lessons for the 2 minute, the moments to say this is the one. It's not a heat where there's one or two, three chances at it. You just get one way to go for it, and so we've kind of adopted that as a mindset for practice and into those moments. So to speak to the shirt, we were locked.
Speak to the shirt, we were locked. All right, so this is something that coaches do a lot. You know, coaches did it for my teams growing up. I know coaches did it for you, where they had a buzzword, a catchword, a phrase, you know, that they kind of, you know, and we've talked about how, you know, maybe in brotherhood has kind of run its course, you know, so you need something else to try to focus the team. Are you a big guy with stuff like, you know, locked? Because now what's going to happen is if this catches on with the team, you're going to hear all these guys say, yeah, we're locked in. We're locked. You're going to hear locked a
metaphor,
lot.
Yeah. It's all about mantras, metaphors, all of that stuff when it comes to training camp and just being on the same page. That's what it's all about, man. I can remember some of the cliches we used to use, you know, and things we used to say on a regular out there on the football field. It's a different culture, no question about it. And you could tell by the way that guys talk to the media, Vic Beasley in particular, when he said, "I'm not worried about what anybody else is thinking. I'm worried about
pressure,
my teammates."
Right?
No
yeah.
pressure.
Yeah.
And I get that. And you know, it's funny. I was listening to Carl Dukes and Mike Bell yesterday, and they brought up a great point. And that's why yesterday we were talking about it. I said he feels pressure. He just doesn't want you to know it. We feel pressure every day. And everything that we do, there's some form of pressure that goes along with the job and everything like that. So I get where he's coming from as a fan. When you hear him say that, he said he has no pressure. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Yeah, he has pressure. But the thing of it is this. He has the support of the guys in the locker room. It's a us against y'all mentality when you play football or any sport like that. Because nobody, no matter how much we sit here and talk about sports, if you haven't done it, you don't understand. And that's how they look at it. And they're looking at you like, you know what? I don't need to explain anything to you because you don't know what I'm going through. You don't know what it is for me to go out there and do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he said what he said. But, yeah, it's one of those things where you go into it knowing that the media and everybody outside don't know as much as you do because you're there every day.
So he's locked.
Yeah, he's locked in. Locked in to what he has to do. No, seriously. That's what it is. That's what it is. You're locked into what you guys are doing. And I'm pretty sure Coach Quinn at some point kind of preaches that as well. Because us on the outside, even me, I don't know what's being said in that locker room. I don't know what they're going through. I don't. I could tell you from the experiences that I went through when I played, but I really don't know. I'm speculating at this point. So I get all of that. I get all the coach speak. I get all that, you know, hey, you know, Vic, you're looked at to do a big job this year. He knows that. He knows that everybody is looking at him to get the job done. Tack as well. And they're doing what they got to do to get ready for this season. That's where that comes from. Locked in. Locked and loaded. Locked and loaded on what you got on the task at hand this season.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see how far locked goes and whether if you start hearing the players say, yeah, I'm locked in, you know, we got this locked up. I mean, just you'll know that it's catching on within the team because there was 2016 – we could not do, and Hugh, you can speak to this because you know you were there with me. We were in the locker room. You couldn't do an interview without somebody saying brotherhood.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the case. And that's what it's going to be this year. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a me against the world attitude because you talk about a team that is – they feel that they're a good team, but they're not getting the respect that they feel that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised if you hear a whole lot of Tupac, me against the world. Or something to that effect, whatever the theme is for me against the world for this generation is. I don't know what that would be. But that you're going to hear a lot of that. You're going to hear a lot of guys talk about not worrying about what's being said about them. Just go out there and take care of your business.
All right, so we're locked in on the Falcons. And day three, final day of minicamp today in Flowery Branch as the Falcons go through this three-day minicamp. Talking about what was day two yesterday with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. The day two standouts, according to Coach Quinn, here's his list.
You know, Stanley jumped out to one that I thought he did. Causey, you know, in the DB side, those two jumped out to me. Offensively, I thought offensive line, a number of guys in that space were good. I thought McGarry was. I thought Matt Gono had a day that was good. And Ito Smith, I would say, from the running back side, certainly looked sharp today as well.
So Jason Stanley looking pretty good. Hey, Ito Smith looking good. Ito's kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, he's just sort of like a mini-me of
he's Devontae Freeman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you will.
Yeah. And so you've got those two kind of backs to go with Allison and Hill, the two bigger backs, the two more pound-a-con backs. And so good that Ito Smith's looking at, and I know that we haven't spent a lot of time talking about Ito, about Judge Ito, but the judge has, you know, he gave us some really good moments last year. He was thrust into a very difficult situation. And, you know, suddenly the number two running back behind Tevin Coleman and did some pretty nice things at times, I think. As for the offensive line, you talked about Gano and about McGarry. Matt Gano's done some pretty good stuff here so far, according to the, you know, and it's hard for me to observe the offensive line, Hugh, because I don't know what they're looking at. So, you know,
I would probably tell you, John, movement, getting up to the next level, quick
well, sure.
feet,
yeah.
Stuff like that, because you really can't glean too much from, you know, being out there in shorts, but, you know, quick movements, being able to pick up the playbook, being able to adapt on the fly, you know, things like that, just the small things, playing in that box.
In all candor, there really aren't that many spots available open on this team. I mean, there really aren't. I mean, if you're going to carry eight offensive linemen, seven of those spots are already taken.
Yeah. I think – I can't remember how the numbers shook out last year, but I think it's 10-10. I think that's going to be the bulk of where your people are. It's going to be offense, defense, line. Because I know last year, I think it was 10 defensive linemen, if I'm not mistaken. They carried 10. And that number for eight offensive line, that sounds about right. Six receivers, three backs.
Two quarterbacks.
And then, you know, I think like six DBs.
What, three tight ends?
Something like that.
Yeah, three tight ends.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, math is not my thing, but that sounds about right.
But tight end, if you carry three tight ends, it's already taken. I mean, you got Hooper, you got Paulson, and you got Luke Stocker. So those, there's no tight end.
Yeah, then you got
make the practice squad, I guess.
My man Steve-O pointed out to me that, you know, as far as quarterbacks are concerned, Mohamed Sanu is the third quarterback. He's the third quarterback on the roster.
The fourth.
Well, listed as the third quarterback.
Oh, of course, because during a game, yes.
He's listed as the third quarterback, yeah.
And you know what? It'd be interesting to see if they – you know, do that in with these five preseason games. Do you get him any snaps? Do you actually put him at quarterback?
Probably not. I think that's more so as a practice thing, and that's in emergency situations. If we get down to the third quarterback in a game, then we're in trouble. And hopefully, that's the only reason that he's playing is because we're going to victory formation, and because we got like 15 minutes left on the clock, and the game's a complete blowout.
Right.
Hopefully, that's the case.
Well, you look at this with Mohamed Sanu being the third on the active roster for the Falcons right now. You're right. Mohamed Sanu is the number three emergency quarterback. You probably knew this too. Mohamed Sanu is also the emergency punter.
He could do it all. It must be nice to be able to have that skill set where you could, you know, be versatile.
Yeah, because he punted some in college at Rutgers. So he can punt, he can throw, he can run, he can catch. He's a nice guy. I want to talk about the guy that can actually do it all. It's Mohamed Sanu. You know, so I'm, you know, that's just an interesting little side thing. Talking about the Falcons getting ready for the season here with day two of minicamp now in the books and day three coming up ahead. One more for head coach Dan Quinn talking about, and this is the hard thing about, this is why OTAs were important. People say, oh, it's not that important. You can work out on your own. It's not about working out. You have new coordinators all over the place. You only have so many practices. Because when you get to camp, that's July 22nd. You have to play on August the 1st. You got to get in with the new schemes and the new changes and the new coaches. There's a new defensive line coach if you're Vic Beasley. There's a new defensive coordinator in a sense. You're going back to the old one here. And there's new things being implemented now. And Dan Quinn, the head coach, defensive coordinator, talked about the new installs.
Well, all three phases, there's new things going on, defensively, offense, special teams. So for the players, that new scheme also involves new techniques, new drill work. So the intensity and the learning that's going on in all three phases, a lot of notes, a lot of urgency because there's no, yeah, I've heard that before. So everybody's hearing a lot of the things for the first time. But I would say, you know, some fresh ideas and some areas that we're going to, you know, change. And I think that's a good thing.
All right, Hugh, I understand for the rookies and the first timers with the team that everything is brand new. I get that. And so that's the most difficult thing. But when you're a veteran on this team, and you've been on this club for a while, and suddenly there's changes. How difficult is it to fall out of the habits that you may have had in the past with other? Because now we're talking about a third offensive coordinator for these guys in 5 years.
I would think, John, that the only thing that's probably going to change is maybe some of the techniques, maybe some of the drills that you do in order to get prepared for practice and things of that nature. I can't really see that much terminology changing. I think this is a situation where you're going to try to make the transition for your offensive, well, all your players, as easy as possible. So, if anything, Dirk Carter is probably going to have to adhere to the terminology that the Falcons use as opposed to vice versa. Because, like, when you get to this point and you've been running offenses, the only thing that you're really changing, John, because all the offenses are basically the same, different philosophies, different concepts and stuff like that. Only thing that probably is going to change the most is the terminology. You know, and some of the things that you might call certain plays, you know, and the way that you get to certain plays. I don't know. Randy Mack would probably be better to tell you, but I know that in the offensive huddle, usually offenses call plays. They're long as hell. They'll say, jet right, 32, 253 dancer, scat back, right, left, go on three. And you're like, what the hell? And the defense is like, it's like 42 under, 34 under. Ready, break. You know what I mean? It's like that. So it all depends. It all depends on how you call the plays, because I know that in all of that, there might be, like, when they say 32 or why stick or whatever, they're telling people where to go.
I have a question totally over here for a second, okay? It's a football question I have been wondering for a long time, and maybe I don't know if you have the answer. Anybody out there has the answer to this, then you could tell me. You can text it in on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line if you know it, or you can tweet at us. In college football, they hold up the signs, right? The big signs. You know, they got pictures of everybody. You know, you got pictures of George Clooney and the president, or, you know, some, you know, a bowl of soup or whatever, and they're flashing inside. We don't do that in the NFL. So either it really works in college football, or it doesn't work at all.
Well, you got the headphones in the thing. You got those for the coach if they want to change something. But you talk to them for like 12 seconds before the play actually starts, or something like that.
And they cut it off.
They cut it off. And I would think that in the pros, you should be able to know that. Like the quarterback is probably the smartest dude on the field. He needs to know all that.
See, I
you need all them damn.
I think if I'm an NFL coach, I just have guys hold up random signs.
You'll probably see them do that. Cliff King was at Kingsbury, and he might do that in Arizona because he doesn't seem like he knows what he's doing. So you'll probably see that in Arizona.
It's been a minute since I've been to a high school football game. Do they do that in high school with the big signs?
I haven't seen that. I haven't known that to be the case in high school. I went to a high school game a couple seasons ago. I didn't see that. But who knows? It might have changed since then.
You know, the no-huddle offenses, and you look over the sidelines, and there's like all the backup quarterbacks holding up these big signs.
Yeah, but I remember that. I remember listening to some of the offensive plays, and those plays, to spit them out, that's why they need all that time, just to spit out the play. And then think about if it changes.
Right, and then you got audible. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
And all the stuff that you have to remember, I'm good. I'm cool.
What's your route tree? What's going on? Hey. Well, it turns out, football fans, that the NFL, because of the Weiner Swampers, decided to change the pass interference penalty rule. And then, of course, they got together in May and they changed it again. Here it is a month later. They've changed it again. I kid you not. They've changed it again. It's a fourth different pass interference penalty rule. We'll tell you what it is now since the Super Bowl or since the playoffs. Unbelievable. That's next with John and you on the Morning Show after a CBS Sports Minute and Boomer Esiason.
Now back with more John and Hugh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely a fan. How can you not be a fan?
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yes, the NFL 50 days away from the Falcons in Denver at the Hall of Fame game, Canton, Ohio. Fawcett Field on a Thursday night to start the month of August. Football is knocking on the door. Well, ever since, and welcome back to the Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Ever since the Weiner Swampers were jumping up and down and stomping their feet about what happened to them, in theory, because really they sort of took the lead, so they kind of blew it as far as I'm concerned. But whatever. Whatever took place in that game against the Rams in the NFC Championship game, the Weiner Swampers stomped their feet and got their way and got the NFL to change the rule about pass interference. We've changed it and changed it and changed it, and we just changed it again. I mean, I can't keep up with the changes. Now, Hugh, they came out and said, okay, now you can challenge the offensive and defensive pass interference, except in the final 2 minutes where it's still going to go to the booth. Then they changed that and they went, you know what? We're going to take the booth replay out of this. And we're going to let the coaches do it. So pass interference will be a challengeable play for the entire game, including the final 2 minutes, and there will be no booth review. Well, they've switched that back now, apparently, and they're saying, okay, you can challenge pass interference, offensive, defense, until the final 2 minutes, but we're going back to the booth review.
Well, they're trying to appease everybody because initially, John, when you think about this rule that they implemented, initially they weren't going to do it. And then they changed the rule. And now they're trying to tweak it so that they're trying to minimize as much collateral damage or as much abuse of this rule as they possibly can. Because that's what we all anticipated, that the coaches are going to be calling it for everything. And they're going to be trying to try to slow the game down. They're still trying to make this rule as easy as possible. This is still, I think it's probably not going to happen during this season, but it's a fluid situation in the sense that there could possibly be some more changes in the offseason. I think they're trying to tweak it now so that they can see what the model looks like. They're trying to tweak it the best they can so that when we get into the season and we actually start to see how it's being implemented, how they can then further tweak it at the end of the year.
Right, and I get that this will be a process like anything else, especially when you're making a big change like this and allowing coaches to challenge either OPI or DPI, and you could challenge either one. And so I just don't understand what I'm trying to work through is what would be the problem of saying the coaches could challenge in the final 2 minutes and not do a booth review, because I can see where coaches wouldn't want that, because all coaches would then hold a challenge back for the final 2 minutes, just in case there's going to be defensive pass interference or offensive pass interference, because one area you have to understand, one area really confounds them, because there's another part of this pass interference that they haven't been able to figure out. What constitutes a Hail Mary? They've been talking about this. You know, is it beyond the 40, beyond the 50? Does it have to be the clock have to expire before the ball gets to the end zone? I mean, they're trying to understand what a Hail Mary is, because a Hail Mary being a jump ball, you could call pass interference on both sides on every Hail Mary.
Every play. I think that when I think of Hail Mary, this is just me personally. Last shot to win, no time on the clock, one play left, probably two seconds on the clock,
mm-hmm.
and you're taking a shot at the end zone. And you know what the standard procedure is for the guys in the back. Like, there's going to be probably two jumpers and one guy knock it down, but somebody has to be in position to block or vice versa. I can't remember how it was.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the concept. Everybody heads to the end zone, and you have, like, everybody's in a certain spot. You got the one jumper. You got the one person that's jumping on the defense that's going to block it, and then you got the other two guys on the defense, or three guys, that are trying to shield everybody else from getting the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So there's where you get a little gray as far as, you know, what you can call PI or defensive pass, all of that stuff.
Right, I saw the
story.
But
I think it's more so at the end of the game, last-ditch effort. That's what I'm thinking about when I think Hail Mary.
And I saw the story about them having a hard time defining Hail Mary, which is what I think led to this, because it makes sense. If you go back to booth review in the final 2 minutes, because you can imagine – that if the coaches had a challenge on pass interference in the final 2 minutes, every single Hail Mary would be challenged, every single one. And that becomes problematic in this regard, that you have, you know, a play that, let's say, because every scoring play is reviewed, right? But let's say that it's an incomplete Hail Mary and the fans rush the field or something happens, or, you know, there's a big celebration. And, you know, now, I mean, it just becomes, because automatically the flags will come out on every Hail Mary. And so, yeah, I think that was part of the impetus to going back to booth review on this, was that they were having a hard time defining Hail Mary.
I would love to sit in one of those meetings to see how they really go, because, you know, we get a chance to talk to Rich McKay. Shout out to Rich McKay. He's very, very as forthcoming as he can be. And it seems like just talking to him that it's really one of those meetings where everybody gets a turn to talk. And they handle it like grownups.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels like when we talk to him. I would venture to say it's probably not like that, John. I would probably say in the owners' meeting, when it's just the owners, they probably let it fly, and there's probably a bunch of name calling, and it's probably yelling and screaming across the room, and nobody's really being diplomatic about anything. You're talking about a lot of money sitting in one room, and to your point, talking about Saints fans feeling some kind of way,
mm-hmm.
and that owner feeling some kind of way, it probably was a lot of cursing and name calling going on. And like, what the flim-flam is going on, and yada, 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 we need to do this. I don't see it being as diplomatic as Rich presents it to us.
You know, and I don't see it as being a panacea. I don't think that the idea of changing the pass interference here just because the Weiner Swampers were stomping their feet is going to make everything okay.
No, it's not. It's still going to be something else. But the one thing that Rich McKay comes on and he talks to us about all the time is how you're trying to make the game better. And initially when we talked to him, he didn't foresee anything like this happening, and it did, because I'm telling you, I just believe in those meetings that it got a little indignant. It probably got a little indignant, and that's why he had to come back and they had to look at it differently, because, you know, you probably went the diplomatic route initially, you know, trying to be cool about it, and then when you started to see you were losing ground, then that's when you started to, you know, get a little indignant.
All right, so you're in an owners meeting, right?
Yeah.
Who is the who thinks
Jerry Jones?
Okay, thank you.
You didn't have to get that out, Jerry Jones.
Nope. Who thinks he is the king walking talking?
Jay Jones.
Who thinks he's really the commissioner?
Jay Jones.
Yeah.
I would probably say.
Do other owners just sit there and kind of drop their head and shake their
but
head?
I would say, like, right now, Bob Kraft probably got the most cachet.
Not no more.
Oh, he still do. He still do. Come on, John. Now, listen. John. Do you really think for one moment that he's the only owner that has probably done something like that? Like, he ain't the only one. I mean, let's just – he got caught.
He got caught.
But he like, come on, man. Come on, he ain't the only one.
So, Bob, are we going to massage this? Is that what we're going to do? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think they wouldn't try him like that. They wouldn't do him like that. I mean, you're talking about a bunch of guys, a bunch of rich, stupid rich guys in a room just chopping it up. That wasn't the conversation
they
was having.
Explain this again to me, Bob. What's the rub?
See, that's not the conversation they was having. If anything, it would probably make you blush if you were in probably some of those meetings and listening to some of those guys. Once they talk amongst that money, that's a lot of money, John, that you're like, and they're doing whatever the heck they want to do because they're all like paid. They're not teasing about that. They're probably teasing about, dude, how you get caught.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? What were you thinking? You know, why didn't you do this, that, or the third? No, they're not teasing him like talking about, you know, the jokes you're telling. Nah. Because I would almost guarantee that most of those owners are wild like that. Most of the guys, they're wild. They're probably wild. All them Yakutas? They pulling up stuff? Man, come on.
Yeah, some of them probably have skeletons, and they're not going to be.
What do you mean bodies? Yeah. What are you talking about skeletons? Yeah. Bodies. Whole bodies.
Well, Jerry does. I mean, Jerry almost flaunts it at times. I mean, but, you know.
I'm just saying. That's my feeling. I think that's what the case would be.
So we don't know what pass interference is at the moment.
And we're still trying to figure it out.
So apparently the competition committee is saying they're working on additional language for pass interference review that would include the final 2 minutes of OTs reviewed and initiated by the booth now and not by coaches' challenge. Another reason the coaches probably didn't like the idea of having the challenge in the final 2 minutes, some probably didn't like the idea of having it, is that everybody would have to hang on to one. You would have to hang on to one. And so you'd have to let something go early in the half because you only have two challenges, right? And they don't carry over. So you got, if you want to, because remember, what was the game that the Falcons were playing last year where the coach used the two challenges in the first, like, minute? On the first, back the Julio play and then, like, two plays, and the first drive he used both of his challenges? Why am I blanking on that? Which game was that where the coach used the two challenges in the first minute of the game, or the first drive of the game? And it was done, and he couldn't hold on to any.
You know what? I think I do remember it. I can't remember who it was.
Was that the Cleveland game?
I don't think it was Cleveland.
I don't know why I'm blanking on this. Maybe somebody can help me on the Solomon Brothers Diamond Text
line. Let me look at the schedule and see if I can pull it out.
If the coaches had the challenge in the final 2 minutes, every single coach in the NFL would hold that flag back. And if he didn't, and there was – he used both of them, and suddenly in the final 2 minutes there was something that happened – that was, worthy of a Weiner Swamper, and you didn't have the challenge and there's no booth review, your fans would, oh, my God. You didn't hold on to it? You always have to go to the locker room with one in your back pocket. All right, we did this yesterday. We're going to do it again today. We're going to play a little trivia in the next segment. Doc Trivia, Mr. Trivia, Abe the producer are going to come in. We have four tickets to the Braves and Mets to give away. 404-741-0929.
I think it probably was Cleveland, John. I'm feeling like it was Cleveland.
A little Father's Day trivia. We're going to ask you about TV or movie dad. And if you get it off the clues, you're going to win four tickets to the Braves and Mets. 404-741-0929. Load up the phone lines. We'll have this trivia next for you where you can win tickets after this with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
It's shot score!
Atlanta United are back in action.
As they kick off Season 3.
Catch every game here, all season long.
Our MLS Cup champion, Atlanta United, play here.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Braves in first place by themselves this morning.
The time.
Atlanta United plays tonight in Cobb County. Braves play this afternoon in Cobb County. We'll explain all that coming up. In a few minutes, we mentioned now Father's Day is going to be Sunday. Is your family taking everybody out for Father's Day to the breakfast? I didn't think so. Besides, no offense, but on Father's Day, I would say, well, hang on, time out. Usually, U.S. Open's on, so yeah, I know. I'm kind of watching golf. That's what I want for Father's Day, final round of the U.S. Open. You know, we'll cater. How about that? You know,
is that right?
Or go get it and bring it home to go. How about pick up? We have a chance for you now to win four tickets to see the Braves and Mets on Monday, June 17th. All right, so four tickets to the Braves and Mets on Monday, June 17th. And what we're doing is yesterday, today, and tomorrow is having a trivia contest with you, and you're going to get a chance to win these tickets. And Abe, the producer, who's Mr. Trivia, who did trivia last night. Where was it last night, Abe? Do you have any idea where it was? Well, of course you did. You were there.
I was there, so I had a pretty good idea where we were at.
He goes to the same place all the time.
No, not all the time, right?
Every once in a while, but every Wednesday is the same place. It's a Mellow Mushroom in Sandy Springs or Chamblee, whatever you want to call it. Chamblee Dunwoody Road, Mellow Mushroom.
Okay. And so let's talk again about the ground rules here, because the first person up needs to understand why they get it. They don't get the – because yesterday we got it on hit number two.
That's right. So what we're going to be doing, just the same, and we'll do it again tomorrow. First caller, I'll give the first clue to.
Right, that's Roger in Douglasville.
And if he gets it right, he gets it right. If he gets it wrong, we move to the second caller. He gets clue one and clue two. And if he gets it wrong, we move on to another caller who will get all three clues until we get someone who gets it the correct answer.
I think they'll be able to get it pretty quickly, I would think. Right? I don't know.
I tried to go semi-obscure and then get obvious. So we'll
all right,
see.
So yesterday was Homer Simpson.
That's right.
Now today it's a new famous television or movie dad.
That's right.
And the first person to get it right, and of course Roger in Douglasville doesn't have, you know, the luxury of having more than one question. He just gets the one. So Roger, welcome to the show. Hello, Roger.
Roger.
Up? Oh, do you got to go? Hang on, Roger.
We're multitasking
a little bit. We're working out the phones here. Abe's got to run in the other room. Abe's having to do multiple jobs today. He is doing a. Okay, let's try this again. Make sure that we can bring up Roger, can we? Hey, Roger, you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, there he is. All right, so Abe, run back into the studio. Roger, you get the unfortunate thing of only getting one clue. That's the penalty, I guess, of calling in first. Normally, calling in first would be a good
thing.
Yeah,
but these, like, I was listening yesterday. These are pretty, you know, specific. So you should be okay. You should be okay.
All right, so Roger, this will be a famous TV or movie dad. All right, Abe, floor's yours.
I think this is a really tough first one. So I think Roger's going to have some problems here.
Yeah.
This famous TV or movie father was portrayed by David Prowse, but voiced by someone more well-known.
Wow. That is a tough one.
I have no idea.
I just got it. All right,
I think I know what it is.
Yeah. All right, Roger, I appreciate it. Thanks for calling in, Roger. Do appreciate that, Roger in Douglasville. Thanks, Roger. All right, so now the person who's second is Brian and Marietta, and he gets the luxury of having two clues. That's just the way it works. And I think there was 8 seconds difference between the two of them. So, Brian and Marietta, welcome to the show. Hey, Brian.
What you got?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, man.
All right, Brian. Do you know it from the first clue? This famous TV?
No idea.
Or you don't know it. So let me read the first one again just to refresh. This famous TV or movie father was portrayed by David Prowse, but voiced by someone more well-known. The second clue you will get is this famous TV or movie father had a fight with his son in which his son lost his right hand.
Peter Griffin?
Nope.
It is not Peter Griffin. I don't believe that Brian is a one-armed man.
Yeah.
Yet.
Hey, Brian. Well, not
you said
Brian.
His hand or his arm?
His hand.
His hand.
Okay.
Okay, now we
I
go
think
to...
I think I know who you're talking about.
Caller number three is going to get another luxury because he's going to get another clue. That's Steve-O in Austell. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how's it going? BU, I got your shirt.
Oh, what's going on? Yeah, I need to go get those shirts. Steve, my man.
What does it say, locked on it?
No, it says it's some elephant.
Oh. All right, Steve, you get the luxury of having three clues. All right, Abe, walk him through it.
All right, Steve, clue number one, portrayed by David Prowse, but voiced by someone more well-known. Clue number two, this famous TV or movie father had a famous fight with his son in which his son lost his right hand. And since I'm too lazy to come up with 5 or 10 clues, I made it pretty obvious here on clue number three. This famous TV or movie father was the supreme commander of the Death Star.
Oh, come on. Come on, Steve. Oh, Steve. Steve. Steve, what'd you say?
Homer Simpson.
Homer Simpson. That was yesterday's. I do not believe Homer is flying around space in the Death Star. So
That was so obvious.
All right.
Do we get another?
Shade of Beaver. All right, Shade, you're going to get 4 tickets to the Braves and Mets, Shade. You don't even need to hear the clues anymore, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Give us, for your 4 tickets of Beyond the Record, Shade and Buford, it is
Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader.
Correct.
There you go.
Oh, right, he went Anakin Skywalker on you. Look at him.
I can't believe we had a caller miss that, to be honest. I can't believe we had someone miss it after the third clue.
Hey, Shane, you're going to go to the Braves and Mets, 4 tickets on us. Thanks very much for being part of that.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Thank you all very much.
We need you to hang on because we've got to finish the segment because Abe's multitasking. We're going to put you on hold. Don't go anywhere. He's going to be back and he'll get with you, okay?
All right, thank you.
Hang on. Shane's going to be on hold here. And by the way, I got it from the first one because they tried to use David Prowse's voice, but he's British, and it didn't work. And so that's when they went and got,
I'm your father.
So, as he's referencing, Prowse was the actor in the suit.
In the suit.
But most people know it as you said, James Earl Jones. That's the voice. It wasn't James Earl Jones who actually physically did the performance.
Right.
Now he's a little bit too big.
So that's a tough clue. I think that first one's a tough clue. The third one, once you say
Supreme Commander of the Death Star.
Okay, it's kind of direct.
You would think it would give it away. But anyway, so trivia night went well, huh? What's that like there?
It's fun. It's actually really packed since school let out.
Uh-huh.
You have a lot of the families and some of the high schoolers.
Where you get now? Like, what kind of questions are you getting?
We get all sorts of stuff, and they go by topic.
Like what?
Obviously, we got the one that we could have used Hugh on, the Ghetto Boys.
Oh, yeah, right.
Bushwick Bill. But one of the questions that we got that not that many teams got was the category was gold. It's like Jeopardy.
They give you a category. Let's try and do this one. You and I.
Gotcha.
The category is gold, and the question is: which U.S. state houses the largest collection of gold in the world?
Fort Knox.
Yeah, Kentucky. Right?
That's not a state, but yeah.
Well, okay, Kentucky. but Kentucky.
Right, Kentucky.
Okay, so we're working with a couple things. First off, you're both wrong.
Seriously?
Okay.
It's not Kentucky. Now, we're working with a couple factors that you aren't aware of. This was a round 4 question. Fort Knox, Kentucky would be like a round 1, maybe borderline round 2 question.
Because everybody
would
get it.
A little too obvious. So the answer, which almost everyone put Kentucky,
by the way. Can I get one more guess?
Go ahead.
Philadelphia.
That's also not a state, but...
No, I was well.
I'm messing with you. It is.
See,
it is not.
He's a trivia snob.
Now, but let me ask you: why did you say Pennsylvania?
Because I know that they make a lot of coins.
Because
and stuff
they have a U.S. Mint. That's absolutely right.
Yeah, Denver. You're
in the
Philadelphia.
Right mindset there.
Right.
Chasing
Kansas City,
where there's money.
Right. Connecticut.
The correct answer.
Well, then
New
York.
The correct answer is New York.
Right.
And they have a couple of things.
Well, the Fed, right?
They have the Federal Reserve. Right. I believe they also have a National Treasury there.
Abe's a little bit of a trivia snob, though, too.
A little bit. But here's the thing. Here's where worlds collide, Hugh. Here's where worlds collide. I got this right in part because, and I don't remember if it was Den of Thieves, the film, or another film. They talked about robbing the U.S. Treasury because it has more money, more gold, more coins than any other place on Earth. It may have been a different film. I don't remember.
Which Die Hard did they rob all the gold from?
That was in New York. Die Hard with Samuel Jackson.
With the cement trucks.
I don't think that was a real. I don't think it was a real.
Okay,
place
anyway.
See, I told you, he's a little bit of a snob.
Yep.
He's a little bit of a snob.
Just a little bit of a snob. A
little bit.
Hey, congrats to Shane and Buford for that. Well done, Shane. You're going to go to the Braves and Mets on us. As he wins 4 tickets to the game on Monday, June 17th. And hopefully the win streak is still intact, and we're building on a big, big win streak when Shane and Buford goes to the game. Darth Vader was your answer. We'll do it again tomorrow. Okay, coming up in just a minute, some of the headlines. The Braves play in Cobb County this afternoon. Atlanta United plays in Cobb County tonight. We'll explain about how all this is working out next on The Morning Show with John and Hugh on this First Place Thursday on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9TheGame.com.